All right, we're in beautiful San Francisco. Andre Alexandrescu, how are you doing, man?
Cloudy San Francisco, I might say.
Yeah, what's going on? I thought it was supposed to be sunny down here.
Mark Twain is known to have said, the worst winter I've had was a summer in San Francisco.
Right on, man. I'm starting to believe that. I started the day in shorts, and now I'm wearing pants and shoes.
Yeah.
So, the last time we had you on camera, where it was conversational like this, was, I believe, after Going Native 2012.
Right.
And we had you and Walter talking about D. Now, since then, you've put on 2 D comps, right?
Yeah, wow. It's happened. I can't believe it.
It's incredible. So give me a state, just give us a little bit of a status of D. Where are we today with D? Is it in production anywhere? Is it actually being used?
All right, what's going on with D? We've been kind of underground for a while, kind of starting maybe 2008, up until, you know, about the time we talked. Mm. It's been kind of an interesting experience because, you know, it's a tight competition. It's there are few resources. You have like few people to work with. Mm. It's just volunteers and their free time. If you think of herding cats, I mean, imagine herding cats who, you know, don't care about you kind of thing, you know. Each has, you know, people have an itch to scratch each, and it's difficult to tell people what to do with their free time. So what we've been, leveraging here was to find enough people who have different scratches to itch. Mm. And in ensemble, we got some great work done. So that has been going for years. And when we were meeting, we were just kind of turning a corner of sorts. Mm. And, since then, we've kind of ramped up quite nicely. There's been like a sustained increase in work being done on the core language, the compiler and the standard library. There's been increased usage. We proudly feature right now a page on our wiki with known companies that use D, and it has like, I don't know, 9 entries.
That's awesome.
Well, truth in advertising, okay? So, you know, one of the things that I really want to go with is be honest till it hurts. If I've worked with a great manager on the HHVN team back at Facebook, and he had this policy, and he told me that. Mm. He said, you know what, be honest until it hurts. You know, whatever it costs, you know, you gotta go with honesty and kind of, you know, because it's easy for language proponents to kind of say, well, we have some usage and it's great and, you know, that kind of stuff. Kind of, you know, inflate yourself to look bigger like that lizard, on National Geographic and whatnot. We're not inflated. We're like, this is it. So if you just look on wiki.dlang.org, you're going to find this list of companies that are using currently, that we know are using D. Also, last conference we just finished last week, I've collected some data, and I said, same policy. I said, I'm going to look at some numbers like downloads, website traffic, whatnot. And if the numbers are going to be like completely painful, I'm still going to publish them, mm-hmm. and make them public. And to my somewhat surprise, the numbers weren't bad. For example, we have a sustained rate of like about 10,000 downloads a month.
Nice.
And I'm sure that's nothing compared to like, you know, Java or C++ downloads and, you know, usage of more popular languages. But at the same time, it's no slouch. It does mean we may have a community in the 5 digits. Mm. And, you know, that's not a lot, but it's not negligible either. So I'm seeing a lot of momentum going on.
Good.
Or there might be a great denial of service attack at work, a really persistent guy. Because these are kind of, you know, successful downloads from different IPs and stuff like that. So I kind of filtered for these false positives.
Understood.
Right. So a lot has been happening. And, essentially the question lurking in the subtext there whenever somebody talks to me is like, oh, what's the deal with Facebook and D? Because I've seen some stuff going on.
Yes.
We do have, we do use D at Facebook.
Okay. In production.
In production.
In the cloud.
Actually, not only in production. No, not in the cloud. We use it in what you'd call development.
Okay.
For example, our C++ linter that's used like thousands of times every day. for pretty much every code change that people make. There's a C++ linter which is written in D, and is actually faster than our now retired C++ linter, and which was quite a surprise.
C++, hold step back.
Yep.
C++ linter. So basically, a linter is something that is a syntactic cleaner.
Yep.
Cleans up syntactic mistakes you made, maybe variable scoping, whatever. It's like JS lint, right? So it's going to clean up your syntactic mistakes.
Correct.
That are going to ultimately bite you hard. So you have the C++ linter. There's a ton of C++ code that runs on Facebook all the time. The C++ linter written in D, faster than the C++ linter written in C++.
That is correct. And we've had this experience a number of times with equivalent systems, which actually turned out to be faster. I didn't look too much into the difference, but you know, my sort of objective and skeptical coworkers and you know said, well, it is faster. But, you know, they're looking at the timings and
interesting.
They're better. What I believe happens is that the decode is pretty much a straight translation of the C++ defunct code, but the C++ version uses kind of macros and pound define and kind of some macro tricks to kind of generate some code. With a kind of large switch statement for tokenizing and stuff like that, which is fairly kind of the classic approach for writing a quick language processor, really simple. And you know, indeed, there's no macros, but there's code generation. So I kind of wrote a little code generator, which is going to generate all the nice cases and tokens and stuff. And it uses a sort of a short circuit approach, which is nice and quick.
Okay.
And apparently that might have generated better code in the end. And the source code is smaller, and the resulting code is faster. So it's kind of a win-win.
Interesting.
So, and you know, so this is open source. So it's sort of public information. Mm-hmm. We're very happy to not only use and improve it, but also receive improvements from outsiders. And also we have Warp, which is our C++ preprocessor, also written in D. Talk about cannibalism of sorts, you know. Kind of. That's faster than GNU's preprocessor. First of all, why the hell would you do all that stuff?
Yes.
Why would you write a preprocessor? It's not, the reason is we have a very intricate build system. C++ is very slow to build, and any company that has a large C++ code base, as I'm sure you know very well, I see. essentially, every company that uses C++ seriously is going to have some carefully tuned build system. Ours, in particular, caches code at multiple levels, including pre-processed code.
Okay.
So going through the pre-processing step, and then you take like the MD5 hash of it, and you know, kind of you. There's interesting. It's a very interesting build system. It's a very interesting challenge. So at some point you're gonna go through this pre-processed text. You're gonna cache that guy, and whenever there's no significant change, you're gonna just reuse it, the pre-processed code. So for that matter, you need an explicit pre-process that outputs text, and Walter actually wrote one, which. You know, it was faster than GCC, and it's within 10% of Clang. Mm. So Clang is still a bit better. And Walter's kind of, you know, working on kind of beating the last 10%. It shouldn't be hard. And the reason for which it's faster, even though it is really modern paradigms and kind of, you know, it is like Walter kind of keeps on adjusting his tune, which I find amazing. And kind of, I like to follow that example. Like, kind of, you know, like a singer who's like, you know, sang one way in the 80s and sang one way in the 90s and sings a different way now. He kind of changed his style, and right now he's much more kind of high level and all the kind of pipes and filters and good stuff, as opposed to like for loops and, you know, assembler and, you know.
Interesting.
So the reason for which he could afford to make Warp as fast was that decode is very plastic. So this one thing that I, you know, that's a nice takeaway about this. It's a very plastic language in the sense that it's like Play-Doh. You can kind of mold it easily and play with it. And it's like, oh, let me add that, you know, let me put that stuff and let me kind of recombine that stuff. With the C++ code base, in my experience, there's rigidity that comes with size. There's a strong disincentive that once something works and works well, reasonably well, there's this incentive to change it and tweak it and mess with it. Unit testing C++ is kind of, you know, you gotta have some frameworks and it's always kind of a bit off. It's never kind of easy and simple and ubiquitous. You know, changing things in C++ leads quickly to undefined behaviors and odd things and weird stuff, kind of, you know. in contrast, it's like it's supremely easy to just switch things around and see what happens, you know, redefine things. Move code around, move data, you know, relay out data, and things like that. Without, you know, you're gonna have a compilation error. You're gonna have unit tests failing if anything happens, which makes for a very quick cycle. Also, like in C++, think of this: a lot of changes of layout, for example, which is important for speed, entail changing headers. So as the application grows, you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm going to change this header again. Maybe I can do something else right now because that's going to take a coffee break to compile. So with D, compilation speed is like one order of magnitude faster than C++, which enables a whole way new way of thinking about coding and doing things in a compile environment. It's also like an interpreter. So it's like you just change the code and kind of run it and it just works or doesn't. So that quick cycle of experimentation was very very useful in building Flint and Warp, the linter and the preprocessor.
Okay. So the question I would have is, what is it about D? I mean, we learned yesterday from Bjarne sort of why C++'s build experience is, you know, kind of less than stellar. It kind of goes against the notion of performance.
Right.
And experience of performance. Why is it that D can build faster? D does use a linker. It does have pre-processing. It does use headers, if you will. You call them something else.
Can you
explain to me? So
sure.
Because you have modules. Is that why?
Yeah, but that's only part of the story.
Okay.
I've alluded to during this panel, so if you're, you know, watchers have watched the panel, I'm going to repeat myself a
bit.
C++ stands from C, and C was designed with a different, workbench in mind. It was very, very customary at the time to run multiple stage compilers. Because RAM was scarce and you couldn't do a lot in RAM. You couldn't, if you do too much, the RAM is going to be filled with your code and data and you're going to overflow memory. So in those days, you would write these multi-pass programs. So you would run first, you run one step that only removed the backslash enter. Backslash at the end of line. That was one stage of processing. Boom, you do that. And you save an intermediate file. So files were relatively cheaper to create and kind of save, and kind of, you know, all these temporary files were relatively cheaper compared to the scarcity of RAM. So you do one step, you save in RAM. The second stage comes, okay, so I remove backslash, what do I do now? I expand trigraphs. Boom, there comes the second stage. Third was something like expand macros. Boom, expand macros. Fourth would be you do compilation, you do the actual parsing and stuff, boom. And then you do semantic analysis, and then probably you do several stages of optimization. And this is how it worked. And, things have evolved real quick since then. I mean, probably by the time C was defined, the fifth implementation of the compiler didn't do stages anymore, and it was already, because things were just exploding back in the early 70s when things happened. So anyhow, the language was designed with that mindset, the C language, the whole, and it was it came as a perk. It came as a side effect that every token, everything in the stream of tokens depended on everything before it. So, for example, you know, when you read an identifier or whatever, it could be a macro that was defined, or, you know, and stuff like that. So in C, processing of the program is inherently serial. Things depend on things before them. So it's very hard to do anything in parallel. In D and other modern languages, of course, there's a completely different computing paradigm. You have plenty of memory, you know, etc., plenty of CPUs, whatnot. So in D, in theory at least, and actually to some extent in practice and the current compiler, when you enter a module, you could enter all declarations simultaneously. You could assign like one thread per declaration and it works. And in that way, you save a lot of the aggravation. It's much faster. Not to mention things like, you know, there's no backslash. You know, there's no all of these idiosyncrasies that kind of slow down all the compilation process do not exist. So the language is designed for a compiler to actually parse it quickly, analyze quickly, and generate code well. So that said, also Walter is a very good optimizer, so he has a very fast front end, and that should be forgotten because I know there's this language. What's the language? Lua. Like in Lua, there's a guy who's like an absolute wizard with JITs. So he has a Lua JIT processor for Lua, which is like super fast. It competes with C in certain certain fields, and it's like awesome because the guy is awesome, and you know. As I often say, a language is as good as the people who work on it. And Walter is a very good optimizer, so we have a very good compiler.
Great. So,
The linker, because he has the linker.
Yes, linker.
So one nice thing about, D needs to link. And the linker is like an absolute bummer.
Yeah, it is.
It's a terrible, like bad serial. You know, linkers are serial. You know, there's multi-thread linkers and stuff. But essentially the idea, you know, is serial of linking. You know, kind of look symbols and you look in some order. And there's some ordering stuff going on. And it depends on the operating system. So essentially you can't bypass this kind of stuff. You got to do it the way they want you to do it. And usually use the system linker. And yeah, actually both on Windows and Linux is the same. We just say, you know what, we're going to just use a system linker because that's the way to go. There's a lot of undocumented stuff going on and a lot of documented stuff that doesn't work. So we've kind of been there. Anywho, the nice thing about D with regard to linking is that it has a bunch of generics. What do you mean, right? So has generics, so a lot of symbols are going to be resolved quickly.
Okay.
In the object file, going to be found in the object file. And the linker's role is diminished because it only needs to resolve the symbols that have not already been resolved.
Okay.
So if you use a library, a traditional library with an object file, well, it goes to the object file and then whatever is from the library is going to look in the library, and that's what the linker does slowly. Mm. In contrast, if your library is mostly templates, white box, code, generics, nice, it's there. The compiler actually spends some more time compiling and optimizing that code. But you know, compiler you own, the linker you don't own. And the compiler can do all these tricks of, you know, parallel processing and fast and all that good stuff. And therefore you leave less for the linker. So you do a lot of linking, you do a lot of symbol resolution during the compilation. And then the linker is like, oh, so this guy needs only like 15 symbols from the library and you're done. So actually linking a D program takes less than linking the sort of the equivalent C program.
So you mentioned templates. Of course, that's what you mean by generics.
Yeah.
In your case, like C++. In C++, template expansion is expensive in terms of really expanding code size, right? I'm assuming that it's the same in D.
Yeah.
I mean, can't get away from that, right?
You can't get away from
so
that.
So you are going to have a cost up front of front-end compile time, right?
Yes. But again, as I said, the compiler you own, you have control over it. Let me make a parallel with a thing we've had at Facebook.
Okay.
Well, you know, JavaScript was there. And Facebook has servers, but there's like, you know, so many servers that Facebook owns and, you know, so many devices that people own. And it made a lot of sense to use JavaScript on the client. Parallel processing at its best. So, you know, you less load on the Facebook servers, more load on the distributed on our user base. And we turned back from that. We turned back. We have considerably little JavaScript in our code right now. And you know why? Because we own our servers. We own our source code. We own our environment. Mm. And when you go to a client machine, which may be arbitrary, so maybe may have an arbitrarily bad browser with bugs and whatever. So essentially, it's a net loss. And we made Facebook faster by actually doing more on our side of the computing chain and less on the client side of the computing chain. And that goes like, you know, these feature phones in third world countries on which we run remarkably well. Mm. And of course, with smartphones, it's better to have an app that does some work on its own. It's more responsive and better, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do all of the above. But what I'm saying is that it's important that you own a part of the computing equation and you can work on improving it as opposed to deferring to the linker, which is like a notoriously large and slow piece of software.
Sure. And that, you know, that will improve over time, and that's vendor specific, as you mentioned, in terms of the underlying system.
Right.
So let's move on to, I think, an interesting topic, given that we're here at lang.next 2014, and we've been learning a lot about all these languages, and in the systems languages that people have probably watched that panel already, and the talks that we shipped. The question I would have is, Go, which may or may not be a systems programming language. I mean, right. let's be honest. And then Rust, which of course is, mm-hmm. and they're doing some really interesting work there, mm-hmm. seems to be, the point I'm trying to make is, a lot of languages are domain specific, mm-hmm. in some sense, because they do a set of things really, really well. So I would use Go when I need to do, you know, concurrent and parallel programming, and mm-hmm. I want a more simplified experience, right? Like they are doing at Google, it's actually being used, right. at least inside Google. Rust, I would use if I wanted guaranteed type safety, guaranteed memory safety, and still be fast as hell.
Right.
C++, I don't know, build whatever the hell you want.
Right.
So where does D fit in between C++, where you can do whatever you want and people use it for all kinds of things that maybe it's not best suited for, to being very kind of, we're going to use D because it's great at, so tell me a little bit about that.
About, okay.
Yes.
Right. Well... Okay, so I'll actually address this very question in my talk later today, but sort of just to give a taste. So there's like the party line, you know, there's the what dear leader says, and you know, here's what the party says. We say that the D language offers a troika of efficiency, modeling power, you can model complicated realities with it, and convenience. And usually languages focus on two of the three.
Hmm.
With C++, you don't have convenience. Like it's, you know, it's a clunky language to get started with, you know, etc. They've been improving on that, but clearly it remains as a difficult to get into language. Convenience is not there. You can't really do scripting in C++, etc., etc. Python does offer things like convenience. Doesn't offer speed. And modeling power, let's say it's you know, weakly typed, so it's not, you know, it kind of have a limited set of tools for anything you want to do. But it's very convenient, so it's like, you know, very kind of fluid, easy to kind of read and write. It's a pleasant language. You know, if you look at any language, you're gonna find, like, for example, Go, it has, like, you know, I don't know, two hammers and one screwdriver, and that's it. And it doesn't offer much in the sense of in the for modeling, you know, for modeling difficult systems. Of course, you know, Go proponents may disagree because they say this is all we need, etc. But, you know, I would argue that if you model a complex reality, you need a language that can actually absorb it, you know, model it properly. And so on and so forth. And languages actually focus on, you know, two sides of this three-legged stool. And these, like, kind of, you know what, let's optimize for all three simultaneously.
Hmm.
And that leads to a whole different point in language design space, which is not occupied to the best of my knowledge, in my opinion. So this was the party line.
Okay.
And then I'll tell you what people say, right? So, well, it's been part of my job description at Facebook to actually use and evangelize the inside Facebook. So this is a known fact already. It's been like 4 months, almost a year now, and so we're having good results. Not only we've opened these projects we've open sourced these projects I mentioned, Flint and Warp, but we have a third project which has also been announced, so I can talk about it. It's our ODBC driver for Presto. ODBC way back when. Were you coding when ODBC was up?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
So, okay. you know, we said Presto is a great database. It's a Hive client that's very swift, very fast, very awesome. And it uses a beautiful interface with SOAP. It uses HTTP request. It uses HTTP as its transport, which I think is beautiful. It is like, you know, very simple kind of response encoding and, you know, kind of an asynchronous model. It's beautiful. So we have Presto, a nice database on top. It's for Hive tables, which are like, you know, huge, absolutely humongous database. And then we have financial analysts at Facebook and in other companies using Hive, who are like, well, they use Excel and they use R and they use that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, I'm in Excel. And how do I look at sales per country of ads at Facebook or whatever, right? And well, what do? They kind of import in, they run in a browser. We have a browser client or a command line client, and they go look at the data and they paste into Excel and all that stuff. But Excel can connect to databases, arbitrary databases, as long as there's ODBC. And then we have a wonderful connection from a huge database with troves of good information to the financial analysts who are not programmers, mm-hmm. but are awesome at kind of making money, you know, the important stuff. And they could just, you know, just access Presto from within Excel with ODBC, which is awesome. The problem was nobody wanted to write it. It was like, oh, ODBC does not. It's kind of super old technology. I was born after, you know, that kind of thing, after DPC was introduced. So why would I, you know? So we thought, let's make it interesting by writing it in D. And it's this kind of, let's kind of, you know, add this twist in the plot.
Interesting.
And we have a very talented intern right now, Mark Isaacson, who's actually working on exactly that. And the project is kind of up and running, and he's kind of, you know, he hit the ground running with it. And I'm sure it's going to be out there soon.
Excellent.
So, and there's a couple more projects that I'm not at the liberty to talk about now. But let me just say that, because I'm rambling, we started from, like, what do people tell you about why they use D? So one reason that people told me they use D at Facebook was, you know, I had the choice to learn C++ or learn D. And, you know, I knew C++ enough to be scared of it. And I got into D a lot easier. So that was kind of, and they said, you know, it builds quickly and it's convenient, it's nice. It's kind of, you know, they wrote lots of code with D easily.
Okay.
They came from a Python background, right? So that's what people told me. And other people came to me and said, you know, We're at the end of our wits. We don't know how to accelerate builds anymore. We have a build system that has an entire team babysitting it. I'm sort of nominally part of the team, of that team. So I have an entire build system, and we have, like, some of our best engineers are actually working continuously on that build system, making it better, kind of, you know, analyzing what's going on, trying to improve it, you know, pushing the curve down, and etc. We have an increasing number of engineers writing an increasing number of lines of C++, and it just doesn't, the curve doesn't go our way, right? So they said, you know, we don't know what to do. Andre, save us. Essentially, they're like, we are out of, for no quantity of money, can we buy a system that builds C++ faster for us? There's no amount of money. So it can't be had for any money, right? So with this, like, it produces code as good as C++, except a lot faster. So build time became some sort of an odd deal maker. I was pleased to see that. And, you know, the funny thing is we still waste a lot of time. Like, the D build is suboptimal. So there's a lot of extra work we do we shouldn't, a lot of eager computation we shouldn't. And kind of working on improving it, but even with all of this fat in the system, still kind of D wins by a large margin. What else? Well, one of the reasons is that people think it's fun. So some people simply think this is fun. So they use C plus at work on like during the day work, or they use Python or other languages, and they use D for fun. And this is great because it gives us a couple of dozen of very enthusiastic collaborators who actually, you know, contribute to the language
nice.
On their free time. So if it weren't fun, of course, we wouldn't have that, right? And, you know, I've heard people saying, I mean, the whole fun thing is like any language is fun to some people, right? Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't have been invented because it was fun to the creator at least, right?
Sure.
So every language has its own kind of admirer's base. So this is kind of a relative thing. But, you know, I'm glad that D does, you know, does capitalize on that that particular dimension.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see that it's actually used in production. So it's,
yeah,
it's
totally.
A language just used.
Yeah, actually, there's a dollar amount that can be put on it, which is kind of weird. Sociomantic, which is a German company in Berlin, which is a 100% D shop. Like, they use only D. Like, there's no other language they use for anything of substance. Probably they use, like, shell script and whatnot. But essentially, D is their core language. And they were sold recently for $200 million. Which is, you know, it's not a huge cap company, but, you know, $200 million for a shop that's built entirely on D does mean something.
Of course.
Yeah, totally. You know, not to mention that, again, at Facebook we're using D to great effect, and that must mean something. And there's a few other companies that are also doing so, and increasingly so. Actually, you know, you mentioned, you know, these two conferences we've had, right? So first conference, the talks were more like, I, Joe Coder, I've had fun with D in the following way. And there's some nice examples and kind of a subject. But this time it was like, well, I, Joe Coder, work at this company, and here's what we did at my employer. So it was quite a change of tenor in the talks this year compared to last year. There's a lot more professional news, and there are like a couple of people who said, I'm not in the D community. But I use D. I'm not on the news groups. I'm not kind of a language advocate. You know, that kind of stuff. I saw it. I kind of used it and liked it. And here's what I did. That kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm very hopeful going forward.
So one of the things that, as we're going to wind down here, one of the things that's clear is that if programming languages have large companies behind them, ultimately, they will be successful in the marketplace. We've seen that with some unfortunate languages. and I think now...
Shall we name names?
No
here.
Names.
No. No names.
We're at a very nice conference. We need to be nice to everybody.
A great conference. Let's be nice to everybody involved.
But I would say that now that Facebook is behind D, I mean, we could make the assumption that since Facebook is supporting you and your efforts... and supporting D and encouraging its use where it makes sense. I'm kind of curious if, when we have this conversation again over the years, if we're going to start seeing more and more people, rather than tinker around with D because it's something new, they start to use it. Now, let's zoom 5 years into the future. D is sort of now really gaining steam. You have one compiler dude named Walter Bright, who's super, super smart, great low-end kind of dude.
Great engineer, yeah.
Great engineer. He's one dude. How is D going to scale to meet the type of success you want?
I'm glad you asked that.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, let me back off a little bit. You know, I gotta say, Facebook is not officially espousing D.
Okay.
There's no, you know, it's kind of not, I'm not let down because that was never the case. So to the same extent, Facebook supports Erlang or OCaml because we have code in these languages. Or even like Haskell, you know, actually not even, I shouldn't say even. So it supports Haskell because we have a large project in Haskell, which is related to security.
Interesting.
Down in London with Simon Marlowe. So, you know, we have code in several languages, and Facebook is a sponsor of cool technologies more than a sponsor of D, right? Mm. So to that extent, Facebook is not sponsoring D. To the extent that they have at least a guy, I can't say more, but at least a guy kind of working on this language within the company for company's benefits, you know, does mean something. Mm. It doesn't mean a lot, at least not right now, but it does mean something. So, you know, I would just say, you know, essentially, like, let's stop at this. Let's say Facebook is a sponsor of good technologies or cool technologies, and I'm passionate about technology. I'm a senior engineer at Facebook, so they let me kind of do this.
Right on.
Because they figured there's something for the company in it too. Now, you know, how about, like, you know, but let's assume either Facebook or other companies, or, you know, some of Facebook and other companies are going to be more seriously involved with D in the next 5 years, and how do we scale up to etc. Right? Walt is a great engineer. He's not a great community guy. He's not kind of a great, like, for example, he's the release, organizing the release cycle and kind of, you know, organize the conference. It's been kind of difficult for he and I are kind of two, you know, the blind leading the blind, like in conference organization. What do you know about that kind of stuff? Somewhat to our surprise, the conference has turned out very well, and not to a less extent, not to a small extent, due to Facebook's help. We have great help from Facebook personnel. So anyhow, 5 years from now, you know, etc. What we count on, and what I kind of my war cry during the last conference was, we gotta have more lieutenants. I said, lieutenant, you know, Walter is a great, let's say, general, but kind of a fighting kind of general, not a straight strategist. He's a great engineer, but not a very much community guy. Mm. But we need people who would be on it, because Walter and I have found ourselves a lot of times in the position of, like, doing stuff that we're not well good at, like web design. Yeah, like, I designed the website. You know, it's kind of odd, you know, the whole conference website we designed, and you know, it's like, I have no taste. Let's face it, you know, and he has no taste. We're kind of engineers. We're not kind of that kind of guys. We don't have eye for that kind of stuff. So I've kind of, you know, we've made progress with that. There's people kind of participating to all of the above, but ultimately we need some lieutenants, and some good lieutenants will be like, you know, any website matter, there's this guy. And I noticed the same in other communities. I talked to Bjorn, I talked to Simon Ben Jones, I talked to Guido van Rossum, all creators of successful languages, and, you know, essentially they said, a lot of matters about this language, about my language, doesn't reach my level of consciousness, doesn't get to me. Like Guido said, he has a lot of people who take care of the small stuff. He kind of vetoes, or kind of, you know, he yay or nays only the important stuff, the major stuff. The minor stuff, you know, let other people defer and delegate. And I think a lot more of this is going to happen in the next 5 years.
Okay.
So this is kind of my vision of the future. More lieutenantship.
Absolutely. And
so I guess, lieutenants.
So if you look at, like, the success of something like Clang, right? Everyone clangs about Clang. Right.
Right.
Clamoring about Clang.
Clang.
Clang is great. Clang is good. Whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, Clang is very interesting in some sense, because it initially had deep support from some company that we could never talk about.
Never.
But you know what? They're called Apple, so I'm going to say it, and I don't really care.
Oh, which
so
they were, I use.
Absolutely. So, you know, Doug Greger is an amazing engineer. That has this large and vibrant community of really active contributors at the compiler level, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has different front-end languages on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever, like, what's your thought? Has anyone played around with D on Clang? Mm-hmm. And if you did get D with Clang backend, or, you know, you get the D front end, the Clang back end, then you get that nice community. And so D becomes one, yet another, you know, riding on the Clang ship sort of language. Do you think that would increase usage amongst those people?
Right. I swear I didn't pay him to ask me this.
Okay.
So,
but for sure he didn't.
So yeah, so the, we do have a Clang port. So the way it works is the front end is shared by three backends. One is Walter's Own, which of which claim to fame is to build very fast and produce passable code, binaries. Then there's the LLVM, which is called LDC.
Mm.
So DMD is the Walters. LDC would be the Clang backed compiler, and GDC would be the GNU backed compiler. On Windows, we use I think all of the above actually work on Windows. I may be wrong about one of them, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I haven't been using Windows for a while, but essentially there's a large community on Windows that does use D, and they swear by it.
Great.
So with Clang, I think it's great, and actually at Facebook we use either Clang or GDC because it generates better code. So for our speed purposes, it's better to just use them. And I do believe that increases adoption and everything.
Mm.
And I do believe it's a key to more progress. Mm. To a larger point, you know, what's the deal with Clang and what's going on? Well, you know, you guys got Herb Sauter, kind of the spirit leader of
C++
at Microsoft.
Yep.
And to some extent yourself, I would say. You're kind of you're more of a mercenary, but you know, you do have a thing for systems languages.
And I'm still a huge proponent of C++.
Totally. But I hope you're gonna be a proponent of D too.
I'm a total proponent of D as well. I'm very excited about Rust.
Oh yeah, we should talk about Rust a bit too.
But keep going. Like
you guys got Herb. Apple's got Doug and others, right? Actually, Dave Abrahams joined Apple like a
he
couple
did.
Years ago, yeah,
hmm.
Or a year ago. And you know, a language. You know, I'm gonna repeat myself because I think this is a great quote of myself, which is a language is as good as people who are working on it. Conversely, sort of the dual of it would be that a language can't be good if it doesn't have enough good people working on it, right? Mm. So a key for a language is to get good people to do good work on it. Like Go is great because it has these libraries written by world's topmost experts in networking. What more can you know? So it's great for networking because it has the best people in the world at networking. And the same goes about other languages. Like, you know, Rust has Mozilla behind it. It's a great thing. Java has had so many hours of work and advertising poured into it, right?
Yeah.
So many dollars at the end. So sponsorship clearly does help a language immensely. That said, there's also like grassroots language. I'm not sure Python how it started, you know, grassroots in a grassroots way, and people just picked it up.
Sure.
Loved using it. So each language has a path. I don't think there's only one possible path for any given language. Sponsorship helps. I don't think it can't be done without. But I do believe that the will gain such sponsorship, and it's gonna do better because of it. The key point here is that good people make good languages.
Right on.
That's the thing.
Cool. And I really look forward to seeing your talk today. That will be on Channel 9. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're filming that. And I would just like to end with, it could very well be that if D found its niche, so let's be honest, JavaScript is successful because it was the only language that ran in the context of browsing.
Yeah, totally.
Right? That's the only reason it was successful.
Yep.
Turns out that it turns out to be quite useful language in other circumstances, but it's still messed up and it's growing, and people have watched that talk. What about, if D didn't try to do the triumvirate thing? In other words, I want to compete head on with C++, we can go faster, we're more easier to use, easier to learn, etc. But we're really, really good at this sweet spot of, context, and you know, we learned about context just now from the great Dave Unger. But doesn't it seems like general purpose programming languages that can do too much
right.
can really hurt themselves.
It's a good point. In many ways, there's this so whole constraints are liberating school of thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, well, you know, Go is limited in many ways, but it kind of has this niche of web services, etc., which is using to good effect. it's an interesting challenge that we're having.
Mm-hmm.
D is good at a lot of stuff. And is not good at very little thing, very few things.
Mm.
So it's very general purpose. And my perception is that it's going to gain acceptance for new code that complements old code. And because of that, I believe interoperability with other languages is going to be key in this future.
Cool.
And this year, I plan to kind of put a lot of emphasis on that. We already support like things like C++ namespaces, so you can call functions in C++ namespaces and
awesome.
Things like that. And I believe this is key to D's success because nobody's going to sit down and rewrite a million lines of C++ in D. But people are going to say, I'm going to write my next 100,000 lines in D on top of my C++ code base that's well-tuned, that works. That's what, you know, that's an approach we use at Facebook. Which is, you know, nobody's gonna be like, well, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Rewriting software that works very well is not, it's just not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this is a weakness of Go because it doesn't interoperate as well with C, and a lot of stuff needs to be rewritten in Go to work properly, to kind of work, you know, the Go style with all this asynchrony they have. So D is much more flexible in that regard. It interoperates easier with C++ and C at the ABA level, and also NameMangler is taken care of and all that. So my belief is that the story going forward for D is going to be new code that extends solid existing code bases.
Cool. And from the outside looking in, the notion of a happy garden, right, versus a monoculture. So one of the things I see looking from all the years I've been doing this kind of stuff, talking to people infinitely smarter than I am that actually produce interesting things in code, is that people get locked into their tool chain.
Right.
I mean, imagine if we had carpenters that only wanted to use hammers, and we had carpenters that were the screwdriver carpenters and the wrench carpenters.
So you've read the carpenter anecdote on Reddit or whatever.
I haven't. I'm sorry.
There's one this morning.
This morning?
No, yeah, it was a kind of an analogy between carpenters and programmers. And what if somebody hired carpenters on stupid criteria like, are you a carpenter for brown wood? Or,
exactly.
You know,
only use this kind of wood,
exactly,
this kind of tool.
This kind of tool, this kind of wood, this kind of, yeah.
But it would be nice to see, especially as we move into ubiquitous computing and the cloud. We're talking about gardens, right? So we're going to use terms like clouds. We should be able to use terms like gardens. And I think D should grow beautifully alongside, you know, maybe some of the more uglier plants. But it can still be in the same garden. I hope to see more of that.
I believe so. So D is great at participating in infrastructure, and that means services that are relatively isolated and collaborate and communicate with other services. This is the way I want to introduce it more at Facebook as a means to create services that are well defined, relatively isolated, and just, you know, autonomous in a way.
Mm.
So yeah, definitely. I think this whole future thing, you know, and the interesting thing about this whole ubiquitous computing and this whole cloud thing is that at the end of the day, there's gonna be some computing fabric that's gonna have to bank some code and, you know, can do stuff.
Mm.
And D is very good at doing stuff. By this, I mean, at some point, there's gonna be some execution of some, you know, doing interesting stuff, work.
Mm-hmm.
And D is good at doing work, as opposed to kind of fluff and, you know, certain thing like factory.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very good at doing work. And when it comes to kind of, you know, doing computation and doing, like, you know, things that are interesting and sort of algorithmic in a way, I'm not sure how to say this, but essentially D is good at getting work done and doing getting fast. And because of that, it's going to be a great infrastructure language for a variety of systems that are kind of communicating with each other.
Great.
That said, we do have a few hitches along the way. There's an ARM port in progress right now. People say it's working, but as it's like, you know, it's working if like I soldier with a bit of like my machine here and kind of, you know, put the antenna, hold the antenna with the hand, put the foot on the table and that kind of stuff. So we need to kind of make that experience really smooth and make it widespread on other architectures.
Excellent, man. Well, hey, good luck to you and Walter and to your wonderful
thanks very much.
People. And thanks for coming on CNI. Great to see you again.
Till next time.
Yeah. Cheers.